Hi, insiders, Ellie Honig here. This is a recording of my weekly note to the cafe community. I hope you're enjoying these cafe briefs and getting a lot out of them. We also like to hear from you, so please send us any thoughts or questions to letters@cafe.com. Dear listener, my heart jumped when the phone rang in our trial room. The caller ID screen, remember those, showed only the numbers 212, meaning the call was coming from the courtroom. I picked up the receiver, remember those, and said hello. It was the judge's clerk. "We have a note from the jury," she said. I had spent the prior 3 months as part of a prosecution team battling it out in a grueling trial of mob boss John Gotti Jr. for racketeering, murder, and other charges. The case had come in well, and we felt confident about our chances of conviction, especially after we seemed to get the better of closing arguments. But then a strange thing happened. Nothing. Usually, a jury will send out notes as it deliberates, asking legal questions, requesting to see certain pieces of evidence, or announcing that it has reached a verdict. Juries often go hours, sometimes even a day or two, without sending a note. But our jury had been deliberating 8 days, 8 long, interminable days without a peep, not a single note. At times during those 8 days, I'd stare at that phone, trying to will it to ring so we could go claim our guilty verdict and then go have a beer. I couldn't help myself. I asked the court clerk, expectantly, "Is it a verdict?" She sighed in a way that tipped me off that I might not like what was about to happen. "No," she said, "it's a longer note than that." "Can you read it to me?" I asked in a slightly conspiratorial manner. Now, the rules aren't exactly clear whether the clerk is supposed to read the jury note to the prosecutors over the phone before they come to the courtroom. Some will, some won't. And this clerk was hesitant. "Do you really want to hear it?" "Yes," I said, as the trial team gathered around. "Okay," she said, exhaling. "It says, 'We are hopelessly deadlocked. We cannot reach a verdict either way, and we want to go home.'" The trial team could read my face. This wasn't just bad news. This was a stunner. The case did end up in a hung jury, as the note suggested. We were so sure, not quite certain, but solidly confident that we'd get a conviction. But the jury had other ideas. The Gotti case reinforced to me this fundamental lesson. Anyone who tells you that any verdict is going to be easy, a sure thing, a can't miss, has not tried enough cases. And that's why Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison, who's leading the prosecution of 4 former Minneapolis police officers for the murder of George Floyd, was wise to caution the public that, quote, "trying this case will not be an easy thing. Winning a conviction will be hard." As strong as the evidence is, my own trial experience and recent history tell us that Ellison is absolutely right. To be sure, the publicly available evidence amply supports the charges against the 4 officers. Exhibit A at trial surely will be the cell phone video footage taken by a bystander of former officer Derek Chauvin putting his entire body weight through his knee on a handcuffed Floyd's neck. The word kneeling seems benign and insufficient. For over 8 minutes, an absolute eternity, utterly beyond any justification. The second-degree murder charge against Chauvin and lesser-included charges, and the aiding and abetting charges against the 3 other officers look to be appropriate, righteous, and necessary. As a prosecutor, I'd have charged the case the same way, and I'd have felt confident arguing it to a jury. But Ellison's warning served important dual purposes: to manage public expectations and to acknowledge a hard reality about jury trials. Prosecutors usually win convictions at trial. But juries are inherently unpredictable even under normal circumstances. Imagine getting 12 normal people who've never met one another to agree unanimously on anything. Who should be president? The best shortstop of all time? What kind of soda is the best? Never mind another human being's guilt and potential imprisonment. And that agreement must be not merely half-hearted, but beyond a reasonable doubt. And just to further increase the degree of difficulty, there's a smart, motivated defense attorney trying to jab holes in every piece of the case presented for judgment. And even if 11 of the 12 agree on a defendant's guilt, but a single juror holds out and refuses to vote to convict, as is the right of any juror, the result will be a hung jury. Now, a hung jury is technically a tie of sorts, and the case can be retried. But as a practical matter, no prosecutor in history has ever celebrated a hung jury, and plenty of defense lawyers have. It almost seems remarkable that any trial results in conviction. Most do, of course. Prosecutors usually get it right, and the truth has a way of coming out. But you simply never know what will happen when 12 human beings get thrown together into a jury room. Talk to any lawyer who has tried cases, and he or she will have a story about a jury that did something that stunned them, for better or worse. Of course, there's far more at play here than in the typical trial. This is a high-profile case, a police case, and a race case, all of which introduce even more uncertainty than usual about whether justice will prevail. From the 1992 trial of four officers in the Rodney King case, to the 2017 trial of a police officer who killed Philando Castile in Minnesota, to the 2019 trial of a police officer who killed Antoine Rose, an unarmed black teenager in Pittsburgh, all of which resulted in acquittals, juries in racially charged cases involving use of force by the police against African-American men have shown a particular reluctance to convict and imprison police officers for their on-the-job conduct, no matter how egregious. The evidence in the Floyd case looks to be strong, arguably stronger than in any of the prior examples, owing largely to the cell phone video, but there's no such thing as a sure thing. The uncertainty will be more pronounced for the three other former officers who were on scene when Chauvin killed Floyd. Prosecutors have appropriately charged these officers with aiding and abetting Floyd's murder, essentially knowingly taking some step to help, assist, facilitate, or encourage, pick your synonym, Chauvin's assault and killing of Floyd. While the notion of accomplice liability is fairly intuitive to most people, we teach our children that if you help somebody do something bad, you are at fault too. It can be difficult to convince a jury to convict a person who did not physically commit a crime with his own hands. Based on what we know right now, justice demands convictions of all four officers. Indeed, it is difficult to imagine a jury viewing the horrific video footage of Floyd's killing without imposing accountability on those who caused his death. But what should happen and what does happen are sometimes two different things when it comes to criminal trials and juries. Ellison is right. Take nothing for granted. Stay safe and stay informed, everybody. If you'd like to receive the Cafe Brief in your inbox, just go to cafe.com/brief.